Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Nice to see everyone who's returned from any kind of sickness. We are happy to have you.
Yes.
We'll start with our blessing. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam asher bachar banu mikol hamim v'na'atan lanu et torato. Baruch atah Adonai Noten HaTorah. This week we are on Parsha Tazria, which often is combined with Metzora for the double portion of Tazria Metzora, but this, since we are in a leap year, it is just by itself, and it begins on page 609. So Parsha Tazria, we'll let everybody get situated. Ladies.
I love when you
say that. Page 609, Parsha Tazria. Parsha Tazria, the word Tazria comes from the word meaning to conceive, and it's also related to the idea of planting. So when a woman conceives and has a baby, if she gives birth to a male, for afterwards she is in a state of tuma, of ritual spiritual impurity for 7 days, and if she gives birth to a female, she's in a state of ritual impurity for 14 days, which always strikes everybody as like, oh, that's so mean, the Torah doesn't like women, and you know, giving birth to a girl is terrible, when exactly it's the exact opposite. So I just want to review this just for some who maybe haven't heard the idea to be able to understand and appreciate it more, is that the state of tuma, a ritual impurity, which we don't really, there is no good word in English for tuma or for its opposite of tahara, of spiritual ritual purity. We don't have it's clean, unclean, contaminated. There's no good English word because English is not a language of spirituality, so it doesn't have a word. So basically what we can understand is that which has the most holiness in the world is a human being. And so a human being is filled with the most tahara, and the most purity, and it stems from being close to God. So it says that we are most like God in our realm of being able to be in the image of God and being as a creator. So a woman who gives birth and is manifesting an image of God of being a creator, of creating another human being, when that baby leaves her, that space that is in her now, that she has now lost that which she created, didn't lose it, God forbid, it's healthy, but it's outside of her, but there is a spiritual vacuum. And what comes in is called tuma. And then that is a process that then has to go through a process of rectification, of waiting for 7 days, because all states of tuma take 7 days in order to transition back to a state of tahara, of purity. So, for example, we know that a human body, a person who has died, is the highest level of tuma, is a dead body, not because we have an issue with death, but because we value life. And so when that life force leaves, the vacuum that is there takes in tuma. So interesting, then the people aren't going to like this either. A Jewish body has more tuma than a non-Jewish body, because it says it's the potential for holiness. And because we have the 613 mitzvot and we have this higher responsibility for creating holiness, when that potential leaves us, we have more tuma. So an animal, a dead animal, doesn't have any tuma at all, because it doesn't have the potential to be, it doesn't have a spiritual connection in the same way a human being does. So it goes up, there's a hierarchy.
How do you spell tuma?
T-U-M-A-H, tuma, M-A-H. It comes from the word, like the tome, like to be blocked, that there is a blockage of spiritual connection. And it's not, like, exactly. So it's not a problem. We don't have a judgment against it. It's just one of those yin and yang types of things of the flow of life of tuma and tahara. Tahara, you'll also recognize that word from when a person has died and before they're buried, they go through a tahara process, a washing, a cleansing of the body before burial. So that's tuma and tahara. So the idea when a woman gives birth, that when she gives birth to a male child, she is in the form of a creator, And so she has a state of tuma that enters her after birth. When she gives birth to a little girl, because a girl herself is a future creator, it's creator times two. So she is losing a double amount of creativity. Wow. She is losing the baby, bless you, and the fact that it's another creator. So it actually has more to do with the double holiness of the higher tahara of a woman rather than there's something wrong with her. So that's why it's doubled for a daughter what it is for a male.
Wow.
Bernice.
Tahara?
Tahara, which means clean, pure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Tazria is, that's a different word. So Tazria is about giving birth.
Giving birth.
Giving birth. Tazria is from the word zera, which means a seed. Okay? V'chol zaro. Zera means a seed, is like conceiving and giving birth. But that's the reason why there's the doubling for the girl as opposed to the boy, is that there's a double loss because she had a double amount of. She had a double amount in her, and so when it leaves, it creates a double amount of the tuma. Okay, so that's why the process is doubled for the woman. There's absolutely no negativity assigned to it at all. Patricia.
So when a woman's in that state of impurity, is there anything that she can't do?
Yes. And when the temple stands, she can't go there, no sexual relations, kind of when she's in a state of tuma also during her menstrual cycle. Because the menstrual cycle is a miniature version of a loss of life force. So the egg that is not fertilized has the miniature status of that and also results in a 7-day period of time that has to be of separation. Lynn. Yes, because her neshama, so what Lynn is asking is, can she say the prayer, oh my God, the soul within me is pure. It doesn't affect the soul. There's no soul change. It's the body. It's the body's potential. But the human body is different than an animal body in having that ability to be creative and to create more little images of God. So creating the image of God is our ultimate level of creativity. So that's how we understand the doubling. So you can answer, or any of your friends who have issues with this parsha, of what it's really trying to convey here. The parsha then goes on as it's talking about different forms of tuma, different forms of impurity, and is going to spend the rest of the time talking about sara'at. Both this week's parsha is about all of the definitions of sarah and the different kinds and the eruptions on the skin and the color and the hair and the if it's below the skin, above the skin, if there's pus, if there's not pus, all of these things, which we're not going to go into those details. What we want to talk about is more about how somebody gets sara'at, what the cause of it is, and then next week's parsha really talks more about the purification process that a person goes through. But the idea of sara'at is, first of all, that it's not leprosy, even though sometimes it is translated as leprosy. It is a physical malady that is an expression of a spiritual problem. And the spiritual problem is primarily attributed to speaking lashon hara, of speaking, gossiping about people, of sharing negative, true information. So what's interesting is that the eruptions that are on people's bodies, that the word that is used for it, and let's turn to page 611. These are generally all called afflictions. Okay, afflictions is what they're all called. All these different kinds of afflictions that are enumerated here. In Hebrew, the word for affliction is nega. Okay, nun gimel ayin, nega. Okay, a nega means an affliction. And an affliction, it says that this kind of affliction comes, again, from speaking lashon hara. And what I like about it, so I've kind of coined the term for this week's class, is the word nega, since it talks about sharing negative information about people that's true, to me, the word nega is just the first two syllables of the word negative. Okay, so it's just like negativity brings a nega. Okay, so negativity brings a nega.
What about sharing information about somebody that's untrue?
That's worse.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but I shouldn't say that's worse. This is worse, because when it's true, then people defend themselves by saying it's true. If something is false, it can often be proven that it's false. So that's slander. So when you say something that is not true, then you're slandering them. That's a different thing.
What's that called in Hebrew?
In Hebrew, it is called motzi shem ra.
Oh, that's motzi shem ra.
Motzi shem ra is when you are slandering someone. And motzi shem ra... Rechilus is peddling, Rechil. So that's where Rechilus is also slandering, where you, it's the same type of thing. Rechilus, because it has to do with the idea of saying things that are not true, more about a group of people. And motzi shem ra. Motzi shem ra means that you go out and take it around and you peddle the information around. Motzi shem ra, which is understood to be that the word mitzora, which is the person who has the tzara'at, Mitzora is considered to be a condensed version of the phrase motzi shem ra. Someone who goes out, brings out a bad name. That's what it is.
Shame
is name. Right. You bring out a bad name about a person by saying negative things about them, negative things that are true. Okay, so that is the prohibition, and the laws about it are extensive, and some we really need to study them, because we wouldn't really necessarily know on our own what we might be able to say or not say, and it's very challenging. Rena.
And what if you speak of something that has happened to yourself and others are involved?
Then you don't name the other people.
So you can say the situation, but you just don't say the name.
Right, unless you don't say, but you have to be careful, because if you can give an information so that everybody knows who you're talking about, like, oh, I'm not mentioning any names, but that person who was wearing, you know, the pink shirt, you know, then that's like, oh, I know who that is. So, I mean, there are ways to indicate who somebody is. Basically, we're not supposed to be sharing negative information about other people unless we are doing it for a constructive purpose.
Well, in other words, if you're in a relationship and you broke up,
yes,
everybody's going to know who the other person is.
Right.
But they are concerned about you and what's going on with you, so you're speaking about yourself.
You have to be very careful who you are saying it to. How much you're saying it. Not everybody in the world needs to know everything.
Right.
This is, you know, we're not the National Enquirer.
Right.
That's, you know, this is not Facebook. This is like anti all of the sharing. We share for therapeutic purposes. And you can
right.
say, well, I just needed to tell my closest 15,000 friends so that everyone know that I was right and he was wrong. That is a problem. We're not supposed to do that, because first of all, we're immersing ourselves in negativity.
Right.
And it
yeah.
doesn't really help. We think it helps, but it doesn't really help.
Okay.
Sharing information about something that we're going through, or that we have a concern, that we're dealing with an issue or a crisis, and we need feedback, or we need just to hear it,
right.
To be heard, that is different. But it's
okay.
playing with fire. We're supposed to understand it's playing with fire. So there's all sorts of situations, and that's why we're supposed to study the laws of it, to understand and appreciate. There's even a Lashon Hara hotline that you can call and ask a question from the Chofetz Chaim Foundation.
Really?
You can ask, I have this situation. You know, can I talk about this?
I want it.
And
where's the number?
I'll send it out to everybody.
Okay.
It's very helpful, because you can find out what you can say.
Yeah.
Because we're supposed to control our mouths. So what's interesting is most of us go right to the issue of, what negative thing can I say? You know, we want to know, what can I say that's negative?
Right.
Our starting point should be, ladies, our starting point should be, how can I stay in a positive, because it's mostly affecting me. Again, remember, the person who gets the tzara'at is the person who is doing the speaking. The person about who is being spoken about doesn't suffer any nega, does not get an affliction. We get it. So how close do we really want to be to that place? If anything, we should say, how positive can I stay and still relate something that I really feel a need to relate? And we still have to be careful about what it is. And there's some things where we're just chomping at the bit to relate negative information. So I listened to a class. I was just explaining one halacha about talking about people who we think are not up to snuff in their observance of Torah. That we are not supposed to talk about people and where they are. This class was even about people who are within a, quote, observant realm, that I'm not supposed to say, oh, well, so-and-so, you know, their tzedakah is not really up to snuff, and, you know, their shul attendance is not so up to snuff, their Torah learning isn't, I mean, or even refer to say, well, they do it now, but you should have seen them how they were 3 years ago. You know, I knew them back when they were whatever. So it says all of those things, and even if you kind of mean it as a compliment, like when someone says, they have grown so much from what they used to be, they have really come so far. It's like, excuse me? Somebody one time related that to someone, said, they are so much better than they used to be. About a family member is like, you don't want, is that a thank you? Or is that as like, well, excuse me, who are you? So it's like, it can be insulting. And because it could be insulting, and someone could be insulted that someone said that about them, we're supposed to stay away from that. So saying things that are negative also can be relatively. So that if someone says, again, like just an example, because this was an example that was in the observant world. If you say, so-and-so studies Torah 3 hours a day. Now, if somebody is being paid to study and they're in a kollel and they only study 3 hours a day, that is a criticism. If it's somebody who's working full-time and they manage to put in 3 hours a day in addition to their work, that's a compliment. So that it's not just the words, it's the context and what impression might be left by what we say. So that the care that which we take is extreme in what comes out of our mouth. And it has to do with primarily with the fact that our mouths are our gift from God, and is our ability to reach the tremendous levels of holiness and elevation through prayer, through words of praise, through conversation, through intimacy, and to use our mouths, if we expect that we should be able to use our mouth to say prayers and ask God for things that we need, then we have to make sure that our tool of our mouth is really being used in a proper way.
You're also harming the person you're telling.
Of course, you are harming, is because we're harming three people. We're harming ourselves, we're harming the person we're telling, and we're harming also the person that we are talking about. That they might as well be like voodoo dolls, we might as well just be sticking pins in them, and that they do feel it. So that it harms all around. Not only that the sin of Lashon Hara is considered to be as damaging and as destructive as the three cardinal sins. The three cardinal sins of idolatry, sexual immorality, and murder. So it says it's not a nothing thing because it involves our whole body when we say it. It's not just our mouths, but it's our thoughts, and that it creates a whole body experience, which is what we see that the nega comes out, that sara'at erupts on the skin in places that don't seem like they have anything to do with speech. It seems, wouldn't it make more sense that if you're speaking Lashon Hara that you would get like lockjaw, or you would get blisters on your mouth or sores on your lips? But it's not. It's like it's on your scalp, it's on your arm, it's on your clothes. It becomes like it can go to your house. It can affect and afflict all parts of who we are. So it's considered such a comprehensive sin that it is equivalent to all three of the major sins. And the antidote for it is considered to be Torah study, so that we can learn what the laws are and how to have a different approach. But there's something that goes beyond that. Valerie.
You can get an email every day from Chofetz Chaim.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's just awesome. It gives you a little paragraph of explaining how not to do Lashon Hara. It's awesome.
It's wonderful, and it's a good reminder, and we're supposed to study it. We're also told that the reward from refraining from speaking Lashon Hara, even one moment, is spiritual light beyond our comprehension, that it goes to an incredible level that we can hardly understand.
It's a very good book that I studied when I lived in New Jersey with a group of women.
Listen
a day.
Mm-hmm.
It's
the same
so
thing.
Hard.
It is so hard.
Not to speak Lashon Hara. You can't even say, oh, she looks so nice. You can't even, because somebody could say, well, you should have seen her 3 weeks ago, you know.
Because a compliment can lead to a criticism, because we tend to be a but kind of people. She looks so nice, but whatever. So that there are issues like that. But those forms of learning. But what makes it, Patricia, I think they're asking for to pass the envelope over. Thank you.
What's Peggy's name?
I'm sorry? I'll send it out to you. It's, you can just Google it, the Chofetz Chaim Heritage Foundation, CCHF, and you can sign up for a computer thing. Ladies? You can sign up for something to get on email. There's lots of books available. There's lots of ways to learn the information. But there's something that's really a better approach, not a better approach, a companion approach, which is why are we even inclined to speak Lashon Hara to begin with?
What?
The Yetzer Hara. But there's something specific that's going on. It says that our neshamas, our souls, are designed to want to grow and to be great. And as long as we are growing and we are becoming better and more, ladies, I need to ask you. Thank you. That as long as we are growing and our neshamas are reaching higher and higher levels, not that we're going necessarily fast, but that's just that we are continuing, the neshama is happy. It's like, yes, I'm fulfilling my potential, I'm growing, and I'm happy. And having that, being at that level makes us feel good. When we are in that state, we tend to not be people who are inclined to speak Lashon Hara because we're spiritually happy and we're doing well. So we tend to have a more positive approach and attitude towards everything and everybody so that we're not looking for the negativity even to speak, to find or to speak. When we're not growing, however, it makes the neshama uncomfortable. And that discomfort triggers in us, the Yetzer Hara is like, how can we get a quick fix of feeling like I am better and that I am growing? Well, the quickest way to feel that I'm doing better is to point out how somebody else is doing poorly. So when I push someone else down, it gives me an artificial lift and an artificial sense that I have elevated myself. That says that that is one of the keys, that if we focus more on our own growth, first of all, we see how hard growing, like you said, it's so hard. It is so hard that when we see how difficult it is and how challenging it is to grow spiritually, it gives us more compassion for everybody else on the planet who is also trying, or we can assume is trying, and we say, well, it doesn't look like they're trying. It's like, well, do I often look like I'm trying? If somebody was looking from the outside in, they might say, she doesn't look like she's trying so hard. Look at her. Look what she's doing. That when we know and we have that sensitivity and we have that compassion then that we can direct to other people because of how we're focusing ourselves in that way.
Valerie. You said our souls are designed to, and then I couldn't hear what you said.
To grow. They're designed to grow and to become elevated and to reach higher and higher levels of holiness. And when we're not doing that, our souls suffer. And when they suffer, it triggers in us the Yetzer Hara that's going to look for a quick fix. And the quick fix of elevation is I'll make someone else look bad in order to make me look better. And that's the quick fix, except that it always backfires, because it doesn't really make us feel much better for so long, which in fact is why Lashon Hara breeds more Lashon Hara, because it wasn't really that fulfilling. So then we find someone else to tell the negative information to, looking for the affirmation. So again, even relating about a relationship from the past, when we talk about the negativity, unless we're doing it for therapeutic reasons, we are usually trying to make the other person look bad and us look good. We are justified, they are not. And that makes us feel more righteous. And so that's the path that we take. So that's the challenge that we have, is looking for a place where we are more focused on our own spiritual growth and where that enables us to look at other people with more positivity. And when we look at them with more positivity, we will not be inclined to speak Lashon Hara because we're looking for the good in them rather than the bad. And our minds can go in two directions. So what's really interesting is I just read this book that's called Positivity, which is very interesting. And it talks about a ratio of positive to negative emotions that we feel. It says that we really should strive, and where it's a tipping point, that when we reach a ratio of 3-1, where our three emotions of three positive, heartfelt positive, not Pollyanna, oh yes, I'm feeling positive, but true positive feeling versus one of negative, that we don't aim for 3-0. We're not looking for no negativity, no negative emotion at all, but a 3-1 ratio. So interestingly, Rav Orlowick, as well as Rabbi Dr. Tversky, who write about parenting, share the same ratio about our communication with our children of all ages, from young to when they are older and we think they're kind of adults, but we still interact with them as parents, of our conversations with them and our relationship with them and our communication with them. It should be a same ratio of 3 to 1, that if we're going to say something negative or something critical, that we need to have the built up the positivity bank in our relationship, in our conversations with them as well, of 3 to 1. That's the tipping point for what makes a good relationship. So I thought it was interesting that this book, which has carried out all sorts of different clinical research about people and what goes on with the brain waves and the whole physiological changes that go on in ourselves when we are being positive versus when we are being negative, that there is a completely different brain functionality, the hormones that flood our body, the things that happen physiologically, like that's just like Tzaraat. It would be like as if the Tzaraat would come out of your body so you could see an externalized view of what's going on inside when we are when we are functioning within the realm of negativity versus being positive. Gabby. I don't remember her last name, but it was a woman. Yeah, you can, it's called Positivity. You can Google it or look on the library. I just got it from the library. But it was interesting that it had that same ratio of what that means, and that the positivity was shown that when somebody is in a positive state, that they are more receptive to ideas, that they are more open to seeing possibilities for how to deal with different challenges that are in their lives, or even puzzles, that they, you know, doing things with creating a positive environment for someone and then giving them a puzzle to solve, that they're more able to solve it than if they were exposed to something that created negativity in them. And that it truly brings out the best in ourselves as well as other people. That there's a new approach, I don't know, it may be kind of a buzzwordy thing, I'm not sure. It's called appreciative inquiry, and it's a strategy that they're using in businesses in consulting on problem solving. Is anybody familiar with this? I've heard this. Appreciative inquiry.
Can you say something positive before you?
Even more, it's like
begin
if
it, it with that.
You begin with what's working. You ask, so instead of going in, and I see, Lynn, I'm like the negative, like, what went wrong? How could it be better? It's like, that's where my mind goes automatically. I'm like, how can we fix it? That's where I go. So this is why this appeals to me so much. I'm like, this is so opposite of how I am. It says, it's better, you'll be better off. It's not Pollyanna. If you're really trying to solve something or fix something in an organization or a family or a relationship or anything, is to ask, the first question to ask is, what works well? What went well? What were the high points? What was good about it? How does this team, when does this team work well together? When do you relate well to each other? What are all of the positives? That it's not just like, okay, well, let's just be balanced and we'll have our positive column and then we'll go to our negative column. That the positive column starts a different conversation that will actually help be able to address those things that are negative and the things that do need to be fixed. But for me, this is very anti the way I normally work, because I even tell my husband when I come home from something, I'm just going to tell you, just so you know, I'm going to tell you everything I didn't like first, because that's in my mind first. But that's really not a good way to go. And it's called appreciative inquiry, and it's for problem solving. It's first start with what's working.
Okay. My question is, okay, that's when it comes to a company, so there's a group, so there's a lot of people. What about when you are in a group and everything is positive and there's seems to be a person who always throws a negative at you?
At you or the group?
At you.
That's
how do you... Well, if you can't stay away, how do you... what can you say to still keep it polite,
positive and positive?
Positive. Because a lot of the times when that happens, you're taken back and you're startled.
Right.
Because you don't expect this
right.
jab.
Right. So,
yeah.
Okay, so that's a bigger question, one that I'm not so equipped to answer, because this is more about us, like what we do
right.
in the group.
Right.
So just kind of as an aside, oftentimes the person, it depends why the person's being negative. Sometimes people are negative to get attention. Sometimes people are negative because they have a negative perspective. Oftentimes their negativity is carrying with it a message that needs to be heard. So we've talked about this before, that in every group that they talk about the three W's that you should have like on a board, that you should have the people with wealth, wisdom, and work. People who are the workers, people who have the wealth, and people who have wisdom, but that there's a fourth important one, which is the whiners. So you have to have somebody, you do have to have people who can point out what's not working, because otherwise you can end up talking to yourselves about things and not be able to see something that is negative or something that needs to be addressed.
But it seems that they always directed at me.
So that we should have a private conversation about, because okay. That may be another dynamic.
That
wealth? That's wealth, wisdom, work, and whiners.
Work.
Gabby.
Well.
Okay, thank you.
This Linda that you talked before, you told us years ago that that's in a group, like in this group, a big group.
There was, I'm sorry?
Two slander. People talking, one to the other, that's not slander. I thought you said in a big group.
Slander is when you're saying something that's not true.
What she said?
Slander is when it's not true.
What did she say?
About whether it's the size of the group. It has nothing to do with, that has nothing to do with the size.
One-on-one.
You can be slandering somebody also just one-on-one as well. Lynn.
You're reminding me of a teaching that Lori Plotnick used to do about prayer. And she used to call it R-P-A-T. When you're talking to God, you know, first recognize, then praise, then ask.
Uh-huh.
Then thank.
And then thank. Good. Yes.
So it's and she said, and I use, it works with husbands too.
It works with everybody. Recognize, appreciate, ask, and thank.
Recognize,
praise, ask,
R-P-A-T.
R-P-A-T. So basically it's the dynamics of a good relationship. But when we cultivate that as an attitude, it actually changes how our physiological and our spiritual makeup and puts us in a different category. All of these aspects here of all of these different kinds of forms of nega, all of these afflictions that happen to people, there's another interesting thread that is running through all of them, which is that the person who is suffering from the nega needs to go to a kohen. They need to go to a spiritual leader. They do not go to a doctor. That's not because Jews don't believe in doctors. We're the most doctor-going people in the demographic in the world. We go to more doctors than any other demographic. We have more doctors, we are more doctors, and we go to the doctors because we value our physical health. So going to a kohen was not because it was a physical affliction, it was a spiritual affliction. So what's interesting is that if you look through it, so we'll take a look at one, and so we can see it here. If you turn to page 611.
Also, nega comes from laga, to touch.
Oh, nogea?
I wonder.
I'm not sure. Okay, so let's take a look at verse 5. And we just want to look here. We just want to see what's going to happen. And Jan, would you like to start verse 5 for us?
The Kohen shall look at it on the seventh day, and behold, the affliction retained its color, and the affliction did not spread on the skin. Then the Kohen shall quarantine it for a second seven-day period.
Okay, so that's a second seven-day period. What's important to us is how long the person is quarantined. So the quarantine is specifically a seven-day quarantine. The 7 days is all of the quarantines for all of these different types of skin afflictions are all 7 days. And there's a reason. And Miriam was also for 7 days because she had Sarat. So it was 7 days for speaking Lashon Hara against her brother. However, what's interesting is why 7 days? What does that do? So there's only two options. You have a one seven-day period, or you have a 2 7-day periods. So with the Kohen looking at each point. But what's interesting to note is that it's all about 7 days. So we have the same thing with the woman who gives birth, that her period of impurity, of being in state of tuma, is 7 days for a daughter, 14 days. But all of them are 7-day intervals. So the question is, why 7 days? What does 7 days do for anything? So 7 days is, as Gabi is saying, is a holy number. And it's the seventh day that's holy, because seventh day is Shabbos. So that when the person would be in this 7-day period, of being confined, they would be spending a Shabbos during that time of confinement. That for sure the 7 days would include a Shabbos. And that the Shabbos itself says that God loves sevens. God loves the seventh. That God loves anything that has to do with seven, because all sevens are ultimately tied back to Shabbos. And that the power of Shabbos itself would be something that would be therapeutic and restorative for the person who had the tzara'at. It's like, well, what's therapeutic about it? Like, why? What would Shabbos do? It says that Shabbos has the power to elevate a person to a higher level. Just going through the Shabbos itself helps a person. That just as Shabbos is what empowers and gives life and energy to all the other 6 days of the week, because it's the neshama of the week, if you could say that the 6 days are called the goof, 6 days are called the body, and the seventh day is called the neshama. So that since the person's neshama needs to be strengthened because they have taken themselves into this kind of spiraling down of negativity towards other people and therefore really have afflicted themselves primarily, that they need a place, they need to be elevated, and going through a Shabbos with mindfulness, because they have to be separated from the camp, so to not just like go through a Shabbos, but to experience a Shabbos, that the strength of the Shabbos would help them and would help restore them. Lynn.
And so, the woman who gives birth,
yes,
is impure. Can she feed her baby?
Yes, absolutely.
But I don't understand that. She's impure. Her body is impure. Isn't her milk impure?
Absolutely not. There's nothing wrong with her. It is a spiritual state of being. It's what her body has gone through, but it's a spiritual state of being. She can feed her baby. She can feed her family. She can do that. She just can't go to the temple, and she can't have sexual relations with her husband. But other than that, yeah, like she's not going to want, right, she's not going to want to anyway. But yeah, it has nothing to do. She's not, that's why I said it's not a judgment. There's nothing bad about her. The only reason the person who has tzara'at, who has to be confined, is because that person has done something wrong. A woman who's given birth has not done anything wrong. So it's a different kind of, it's a different kind of a process, even though it's all in the same parsha. Jan.
How was it determined that this affliction was due to lashon hara?
That is what we're taught. Because it's based on the word metzora, which is considered a condensation of the word motzi shem ra, the person who brings out a bad name. So a person who is a metzora gets tzara'at. That the words are related to what it's based on.
So when this was happening, they weren't aware that that was the reason?
They were very aware of it. That's why they went to the Kohen. Okay. That's why they didn't go to a doctor.
So they were not aware, because we don't have this punishment that was the gift.
So it was considered a gift. It was considered a gift, an affliction that was a gift, because it was an early warning system. That we, in some ways, would be better off if we had some sort of a system that alerted us to the fact that we were doing something wrong, instead of waiting till we just had a ruined life at the end of our lives. It's like, how about if we catch it early and do something about it? So it was considered a gift to the Jewish people that they had the nega, that they had the affliction of tzara'at on their bodies, on their clothing, and on their homes. So we don't merit to have it. So it says that the Jewish people have to be at a certain spiritual level and spiritual sensitivity to warrant, to merit having the affliction. So it's like somebody who has an allergy. If someone's not sensitive to whatever, they can be exposed to whatever the allergen might be and doesn't do anything to them because they don't have a sensitivity to it. Someone who is very sensitive, you give them just a little bit and they react very strongly. So this is in the same thing, only in the realm of the spiritual. So when the Jewish people are not at such a high level and we've lost our sensitivity and we're asking ourselves questions like, how much negativity can I speak? That's already telling us, like, we're not even in the right frame of mind that we're talking about trying to be at a place where saying something negative would cause a reaction to us, like we would react very quickly to it, and that was really considered a gift. Cindy.
Was there an angel, I guess, maybe, with respect to children, like under 12, 13, 10, whatever?
Of speaking lashon hara?
Of not being afflicted.
Oh, that's a really good question. I'm guessing that nobody under the age of 13. I'm guessing, but it may be nobody under the age of 20. because the age between 13 and 20 or 12 and 20 for a girl is considered like a spiritual adolescence. So at Bar Bat Mitzvah, you become obligated in all the commandments, but the punishment or consequences for those actions are held in like a, what's it called in law when you have a suspended
abeyance,
that it's held until you're 20 to see kind of like what you're doing with it. So it may be that 20 would be the youngest age that somebody would be afflicted. I don't know that for sure, but that's very possible.
So are you saying that we are not afflicted now because we are not at that spiritual level?
Correct.
So we just have to watch it.
so we have a disadvantage. We are at a disadvantage because we're not getting the warning system. I mean, again, like somebody who has, so it's like, you know, somebody who is, who doesn't have a sense of smell, for example, they can't smell if something's burning. They are at a disadvantage. Or somebody who doesn't register pain, if they have an insensitivity, they can get themselves really hurt. Like when I was very pregnant and standing next to my walk, you know, I had not limited sensitivity in my abdominal area, and I was like caught on fire because I didn't feel it. So, you know, so we could say, oh, we're so lucky that we're not getting all of this, but the truth is we would have an advantage if we could get some sort of an early warning system.
I learned that if people are speaking Lashon Hara in a group,
yes,
first you try to change the subject.
Yes.
If it doesn't work, leave.
Leave. That's right, because it's like they're spewing poison.
Yeah.
They're spewing poison, and we're getting, or you could say we're getting the shrapnel of it.
Mm-hmm.
Changing the subject often works really well, especially if you change the subject to the person who's speaking the Lashon Hara. Like, let's talk about you, you know. How about, you know, whatever. How about those Broncos? How's your family? How's your life? Or whatever you want to say. So having some, we've talked about this before, of having strategies of what to implement, like in a private conversation, in a group, in a, in a meeting, even when things can also spiral. That's why whoever speaks first at a meeting, it's like sometimes good to plant somebody who's going to start things off in a positive direction so that it sets the tone. Like I often talk about how wonderful our class is here. People say, like, you know, who comes to your class? It's a wonderful group of women. Some people come there every week. Some people come when they can. But somehow, when people walk in, they know what the ground rules are. And everyone is so respectful and so positive and so, like, on target. Nobody ever, like, walks in here and, like, wrecks it up. And I've had other classes where there – I'm serious. I've had other classes where there were people in who were undermining the flow of what was going on. And this is – it's a real bracha. It is a real blessing to have this. So thank you. It's wonderful.
No, thank you.
So this idea of going back to the idea of the healing process of this idea of seven and the idea of Shabbos. It says that Shabbos is at the heart of all aspects of sanctity, and that we put in our effort, just like we say, 6 days of the week you shall work, and the seventh day is Shabbos. So what did we do for the seventh day? We didn't do really anything. We received it as a result of our efforts of the 6 days. It was granted to us as a gift. So the gift, though, is taking us to this higher level. And all the sevens, if we think about it, we're coming up to Pesach, which according to the Torah is a seven-day holiday. It's just only extra here outside of the land of Israel. We celebrate it for 8 days. Sukkot is a seven-day holiday. Shavuot only happens after we do a double count. We count 49 days of the Omer, but we also do a count of weeks to have 7 times 7 to make sure we have 7 Shabbases, that we have Shabbos in there. We have the Shemitah, which is the sabbatical year. We have the Yovel, the Jubilee, which is also 7 times 7 years of 49 years, and then it's the 50th year. Everything that has anything to do, any connection with holiness at all, is going to include the concept of seven because it has to do with Shabbos. So even the sanctity that comes from a wedding that we call a marriage, a kiddushin, is a sanctification of the relationship, and we have the 7 blessings that are recited under the chuppah for the kiddushin to sanctify and elevate. And we go through 7 days of the Sheva Brachot, the 7 days of celebration after the wedding, so that for sure the couple will have a Shabbos either that will be part of their 7 days. So that everything is about how can we maintain contact and touch a Shabbos. Because it's going to be Shabbos that is the piece that is enlivening the whole holiday. Says the sanctity of Pesach comes from the fact that there's a Shabbos in it. Sukkot, that there's a Shabbos in it. Before Brit Milah, before circumcision, that the baby must have a Shabbos and go through a Shabbos. So everything is about, it must touch Shabbos in order to get to its higher level, and that will be involved too in the purification process with somebody who has Sara'at, that they will have a Shabbos as part of their 7-day period.
Is that why we wait 8 days to make certain?
Make certain they must have a Shabbos.
That is so interesting.
Everything, even an animal that was that would be used for a sacrifice could not be done until the 8th day. So actually the Brit Milah kind of follows the same thing as an animal. Like, until you dedicate something, there must be a Shabbos. So we tend to think of it as Shabbos is just like this day of the week coming, you know, starting tomorrow night, and it's Friday, Saturday, and it's our weekend. Instead of thinking like this is the most core concept that is enlivening and elevating every single thing that we do as Jewish people. Every single thing. And the Jewish people are called Am Mikadashe Shvi'i. We are the nation that sanctifies the seventh. And the more we put in, the more of that 6 days of the week you shall work, the more of that effort that we put into reaching what that 7th day is going to be, the more open we can be and more we can receive of the Kedusha and the holiness of the Shabbos. So when people sometimes say, I don't really get so much out of Shabbos, the first question is, not in a critical way, what did you put into it? How were the 6 days leading up to Shabbos spent in order to merit getting something out of the 7th day? Because it doesn't just come for nothing. There needs to be the 6 days we're commanded to put in effort and work, and then the 7th day we're given as a gift. Lynn, looks like you had a question there. No? Okay. All right. So that idea of what we put into it is what is going to determine what we're able to get out of it. I'm sorry?
You mean not our profession work, you mean already thinking of Shabbat and
already, because it's so the term like Shomer Shabbat, if someone says they're Shomer Shabbat, we usually tend to think of it that it's somebody who is observing all the laws of Shabbos day. But Shomer means also to anticipate and to wait for and to want, to be looking forward to. So Shomer Shabbat could be also, I'm anticipating it and waiting for it and wanting it all 6 days and putting in effort to make that happen. Now, part of making that happen is going to our businesses and doing our work and earning the money to pay for the groceries that we're going to need for the Shabbos. So that is also part of it. But if I do my work and say, I'm going to work now, and I'm seeing my clients, my students, my customers, my whatever, I'm getting this money because what I'm doing with it is I'm getting ready for Shabbos. So it's the same thing as so I can have my guests and I can and have something nice. That's why I'm doing it. That's the underlying reason why I want the money for it, is what am I going to do with it? So it's comparable to our lives also in this physical world, is that we're preparing for the time that we call Shabbos, which is Olam Haba, the world to come. It's like, how am I using my life? It's also the same type of thing, the same metaphor, the same model of what I'm doing to prepare for my neshama's full experience, which is in the world to come, which is called the time when it will all be Shabbos. So this concept of these sevens is what takes us from a place of tumah, a place of impurity, to a place of tahara, of being reconnected and spiritually purified. And so the metzora, the person who had the tzara'at, that's what they went through, and their process was either a one period of 7 days, and the Kohen would look, or a two period. That was for the dire cases. If you read throughout this whole thing, there's no such thing, interestingly, there's no such thing as somebody who is a permanent, is in a permanent place of having Sara'at. It's not. So again, like leprosy. Leprosy is someone, you end up in a leper's colony, you're there. This was something that was going, it's kind of like, you're going to get better one way or another. It's either going to be through one Shabbos or it'll be through two Shabboses. But that's it. And then you will be at a higher level. So what is the strength of Shabbos specifically for the Jewish people? And I think it's such a beautiful idea, and it has to do with the fact of when a person speaks Lashon Hara against another person, and specifically we're talking about one Jewish person against another Jewish person, no, you shouldn't speak negatively about anyone because it's a habit. The way we speak about anybody, you cannot spend all day saying nasty things about non-Jews and then think you're going to turn off that approach and then only say nice things about Jewish people. It's not going to happen. It's a habit. So we're trying to cultivate a habit of speaking positively about people. But that Lashon Hara, it says that that one of the reasons that God is so against it is because God is our parent. And a parent loves his children. A parent loves his children, and we're told in the Torah, it says, you are banim atem, you are my children. And when one child speaks against another child, there's nothing that gives a parent more heartache than to see their children fighting and speaking nastily about one another. It's heartbreak. It says, God hates that more than if we talk bad about God himself. Like, if you hear that someone has said something mean about your child, it just goes right through you. It's so destructive. So it says that this idea is that that's why the person has to be separated, just like you would give a child a time out. I can't be with you. And that God says, I can't be with people who are speaking Lashon Hara. You're chasing my presence away from you completely. I can't even be with you. It's so terrible for me. So that this feeling that God has, says that the antidote again then goes back to Shabbos, is because what's Shabbos all about? Shabbos is about the Jewish people as a collective. It's about the Jewish people all coming together. It's about us being unified in love. So it's interesting that we have an idea that before we perform a mitzvah, regardless of what it is, that we make a declaration that we say that we are going to do it having in mind the mitzvah, that we should establish the mitzvah of V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, shall love your neighbor as yourself. I know people who, before they sit down to a meal, they say, before we begin this meal, we should all keep in mind that we want to be able to uphold the mitzvah of V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. Can I tell you that when someone starts a meal like that, there's no Lashon Hara? Because how can you do that? You just dedicated your meal to the love of all Jewish people. So how can you do that? So even before we perform other mitzvot, we do the same thing. And we say, I want to fulfill the mitzvah via Hafta L'Recha Kamocha, because it's in the merit of the unity of the Jewish people that Shabbos has its power and that God's Rachmanis comes down on us. So the quickest way to chase away God's mercy on us is to make ourselves into children who are speaking negatively about one of God's children. And we could say, well, that person doesn't even really merit being God's child. It's like, well, I'm sorry, God has all sorts of children. And you're one of them, and they're one of them. And, you know, obviously I'm happy to be a grandparent, but one of the things that I'm so happy about, and I told my daughter, I said, I'm so happy that you now have a child so that you can now know how much I love you. Because until they have their own children, they spend most of their time, consciously or unconsciously, trying to figure out who the parents love more and trying to be that one, preferably. So that idea of recognizing that the closest way, this is it's one of the reasons that God gave us the ability to experience parenthood, so that we would know what it feels like to God, to how that relationship we want with our children. And that's the relationship that God wants with us. So that idea of cultivating the V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, of loving another person as we do ourselves, is how do we love ourselves? We love ourselves if we're a healthy person, if we're an emotionally healthy person. We love ourselves despite the things that we may do wrong. And we give ourselves the benefit of the doubt. It's like, oh, I didn't mean to. I woke up on the wrong side of the bed. I had a bad day. I misunderstood. We are so ready with all sorts of excuses about why we did something wrong. It says, so then give them to the other person as well. That's what it means to love someone like, to love another person as you love yourself. It's give them the same benefit of the doubt that you would give yourself. And we have plenty of benefit of the doubt that we tend to give ourselves. So that idea of Shabbos being about the Jewish people, that God gave the Jewish people, not just one person, Shabbos, and it was the strength of it is based on the unity of the Jewish people. So the person has to go outside of the camp because they have broken unity with the Jewish people, and they themselves have seen that they're not one of God's children. It's like, you're acting like you're not part of the family. So if you're going to act like you're not part of the family, you need to be outside of the family for a 7-day period until you reassess the situation. And this power of this was that it could turn someone around in 2 weeks maximum, which is a pretty quick change. Think about how many months, years people spend in therapy trying to deal with issues that they have. And this is a 2-week therapeutic process. You get the affliction in like very full force, and you get the correction, and so you can get back on track. Because the goal is to get you back into the family and back functioning in a healthy and wholesome way. Gabby.
Mm-hmm.
The Kohen will come and check on you. Every 7 days, he'll come and take a look. And it says, like, understanding that, that just being in the presence of the Kohen would be inspiring. Because we know why the Kohanim is because the Kohanim are descendants of Aaron. And what was Aaron all about? Aaron was about seeking peace and pursuing it, and relationships, and having relationships be wholesome and happy. And it pained him greatly when there was any strife amongst the Jewish people. It says, you were with the very person that you needed to be with, who was the antidote to what you were suffering. Why are you speaking Lashon Hara? It's because you were not loving people the way one should, and so that you had fallen into this place. So to be with the Kohen, who represented the opposite of that. So it says also that we may not be able to be around Kohanim, but we should cultivate friendships with people who are positive people, who see the good in others. And again, not it doesn't mean to not address problems. It means to address problems in a specific way that is really helpful and healthful, because having a diet of negativity, that is the nega, and we do suffer. We may not be having the external signs, but people have sleeping problems, they have eating problems, they have emotional problems, they're depressed. So we're suffering. We just don't get to have the external sign that we can identify right away. So this parsha, even though it goes into all of these details about all of the specific afflictions, that the main idea that we're supposed to take from this is that these afflictions were given to a person to demonstrate that they had a spiritual malady, that by working on themselves and correcting and focusing on their own spiritual growth and having compassion and love for other people, they wouldn't have to spend so much time not trying to speak Lashon Hara, because they wouldn't have any Lashon Hara to speak. It's like what we see and what we focus on, that's what we start to talk about. So to change ourselves with an intent, to have some mindfulness and an intentionality about how we have conversations, and that it becomes a habit. And to start with the habit of this appreciative inquiry, even about myself, about other people, is what's right with this, what's good, what's beneficial, what can I learn from this, what's helpful, all of those things first, and then it opens up my mind to really be able to deal with any specific issues. This Lashon Hara is something for us to stay so far away from. And again, every moment that we don't speak Lashon Hara is considered tremendous reward for us, so that we want to stay away from the nega of negativity and cultivate a life of positive connection.
Amen.
Amen.
Before we end, Ellen's too humble to self-promote. Probably all of you know that on Sunday she's the keynote speaker, and our special day, 3 o'clock.
I believe so. Three o'clock.
It's a spiritual renewal community-wide women's event, and at
where?
At Temple
Emmanuel. Yes.
Yeah. 3 o'clock.
So you're welcome to come. It's sponsored by Hadassah and other organizations.
Many organizations. You register through Hadassah.
So it's I'm speaking about the unique opportunity for a spiritual renewal for the month for Rosh Chodesh Nisan, since that's what we're going to be celebrating.
And for people who didn't know about it and already committed to the general break, can you talk about Pesach next?
We will probably for sure talk about Pesach next week or the week after.
Or both.
Thank you.
We'll mix it in.
Right, because we have to give it to Bar and some of us.
Pesach will definitely be on all of our minds. I'm sure it will enter in. And the truth is that this enters in, because when we talk about chametz and getting rid of chametz, we should start with ourselves. And the chametz of our speech is probably the, can't think of a better place. One of the, so I'll leave you with this, that Pharaoh, Paro, that his name is understood is to be a contraction of the word of pe-ra, of a bad mouth. Okay, so we don't want to be pharaohs in our own lives. All right. Have a wonderful Shabbos.
Ellen, this connection between how you talk about